What's going on, everybody? This is the Coco and Connie podcast. I am your host, Coco, and today I have a super special guest with me. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, guys. Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. My name is Karan Wadhwa. I just go by K. And since I guess I'm going to go ahead and plug what we're about to talk about, I wrote and directed a film called The Duo, which is now in post-production. So I'm really interested. I'm really excited to get into all that, and let's get into it.
All right. So today, I want to get into what you do, actually, mm-hmm. with the duo the latest project, the duo, and a little bit about, your 9-to-5, a little into that. But first, yeah, I definitely want to get into the duo and, like, how did that even come about? Because you wrote the script, right?
Yeah, I wrote the script about a year ago.
Okay.
A year ago, yeah.
Oh, that's not even that long ago either.
No, I had the idea like 5 years ago, but I finally grew the balls to like actually write
it. Doesn't that feel great? Now it's like coming to life. It's dope. That's exactly. Dope. About the story, how or what gave you like the inspiration to write that story?
Yeah, so I always think, and it's kind of interesting, I know this is an audio podcast, but we're in like a music studio right now recording. So being in these types of rooms back in the day when I would go to certain rooms. I'm from Nashville, so like it's a music city.
Yeah.
So being in a music studio really, it tells a story so much further than what the music actually, you know, makes. Mm-hmm. Like when you listen to it, like last week you had Drew West on and, mm-hmm. and he was talking about music production and stuff like that. But there's so much more to the story, like what the engineers do and just being in this like confined dark space. Mm-hmm. It really tells a story that a lot of people don't recognize when they actually hear the album or the EP or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to write a story about music producers that kind of make it big, and their time of trying to find the second sound. What I wanted to really avoid is there's always stories about musicians coming together and like meeting for the first time, writing mm-hmm. their first album or, you know, making their first album.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think people often fail to talk about is trying to find that second wave.
Yeah.
So this is all about the characters Anthony and James, who are their stage name Capone and Escobar,
mm-hmm.
trying to figure out their second album once they've found success with the first one. They went on tour, they met women, they moved to LA, they bought houses, did the whole Vice thing. and we can get into that a little later. But it was really about finding their second wave, which I think a lot of us struggle with, and no one. You know, everyone fails to talk about. So.
Yeah, because it's like, I feel like getting that first hit or, you know, that first, like you said, that first wave,
mm-hmm.
that's not really the easy part because I know there's like a ton of work that comes with that too.
Yeah.
But it's like, once you get that, it's like, okay, I'm here now. Now, what do I do next?
Yeah, absolutely. And
that's like, to me, that seems like the hardest shit ever because it's like, you have to top yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's kind of hard to do that.
Absolutely. And I'll just tell the listeners right now, like the duo is about, two musicians mm-hmm. who are writing and recording their second album. And it goes through like four key scenes of a larger project
mm-hmm.
Of them finding their second wave. But the characters, Anthony and James, are very different. That's what I'm trying to get to. They're very contrasting.
Yeah.
And in a way, they're both me, you know, mm-hmm. I heard someone say like, always write about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say like, I have two sides to myself. I'm not crazy or anything, but you know, it's always important to have different sides, especially if you grew up in different parts of the country and stuff like that. So I wanted mm-hmm. to write about like the more flashier side of someone,
mm-hmm.
maybe me, and then the more calm side and how they work together.
Yeah.
So that's what Anthony and James encompass. And because they're so contrasting, it's always hard to find that second wave like we were talking about.
Yeah And I feel like with most people, I feel like we all have that. Mm-hmm. More people have, you know, two sides. Some people have like more than two sides.
Yeah
a bunch of different sides of themselves. And so I think that's dope, like kind of having two characters. I don't know why I can't talk right now.
No worries.
Having two characters that are this like totally different,
mm-hmm.
but they're like you in a way. Like that's cool because like I can see a lot, like just thinking of like different movies and stuff like that, or, you know, different different writers or producers that do something like the same thing, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I think that's dope, because that is a good way to write, because it's like, I know these characters, so I can really like tell a story through these characters, because they're both me. Like, right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's both, they're both me. So yeah, that's dope. I really like that. Like, even you know, seeing what you showed me and like, you know, reading it, it was like, yo, these are, you can tell like they get on each other's nerves. Mm-hmm. One is like super like, no, we have to get shit done this way, and then the other one is like, man, fuck this, like,
yeah.
Like, let's just enjoy the fruits of our labor, like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's dope. I really like that. I like seeing it. And then you know, the fact that you didn't make it so what's the word, stereotypical, the characters, that was dope too, just to see that contrast. That was dope.
Yeah, so, I mean, what I wanted to do is, even when I started to write it, for those of you who don't know, by the way, I'm Indian, so we might get into that a little
get into
later.
That, yeah.
So like, you know, brown people represent. But what I wanted to do is, I didn't want to write the cocky character. I knew I wanted someone who had a darker skin tone. Like, I wanted a black character.
Yeah,
I think that was really important. I didn't want two stereotypical white guys like Chris Evans, Chris Pratt, that kind of thing. but I didn't want to write the flashy character that didn't give a. Can I curse on this?
Oh, absolutely.
That didn't give a fuck, that didn't give a shit, you know, to be like the black character. I just didn't want, I wanted to kind of reverse those stereotypes that shouldn't fit, you know, every black person out there.
Or every movie you see.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Oh, here we go.
absolutely. And it's like, you've seen it over and over again. So I really wanted the more calm, collected person that has their shit together to be, it was, that character's James Cooley. And it's played by Kendall Reese, and he did such a good job of portraying that calmness and collectiveness.
Yeah, that was dope. I really like that part of it though, because when I was reading it, I'm like, he's gonna be black.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he wants to go, like, to whatever. Like, he's gonna be like, oh, whatever. So just to see like how you switched that up, that was really dope. And even, you know, like the riddle and everything, like, it was just a really dope. I can't wait to see it.
Thank you.
I'm excited about it just to know that, you know, you came up with this, and it was really like, I'm going to write about myself being these two people, and I'm not going to make it something that we see all the fucking time. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like most people, they want to... And I feel like in order for something to be seen, people feel like they have to make it what we already see all the time. And it's like, that's not true. Like, it's, you have to do something different, and it's going to get respected. If it's a good story, it's going to get respected. It's going to be shown. It's, people are going to want to see it. It doesn't have to be the same old stereotypical bullshit that we always see. It's like, we know this story.
Right, like, right.
I hate watching movies or anything that I, when I know, like, what's going to happen or what's going to be like the plot or whatever. Like, no, I don't want to see this. So,
right.
And it's refreshing.
This was my first time writing anything.
Oh, that's dope.
Oh, thank you. And, but you know, I wanted to, like, I mentioned this earlier, I wanted to avoid like the lazy writing trope of two musicians meeting for the first time and creating something. Yeah. It was all about trying to find the second sound.
Yeah.
And that was kind of incorporated through the riddle, which you just mentioned, which for the listeners, I'll just say the riddle was, the character James asks the character Anthony, there are four birds in a tree. One of the birds gets shot. How many birds are left in the tree? Yeah. And I won't give it away or anything, but I mean, and you read the script, so. But when
I remember you asked me that when you first met, and I was like, I don't know, like, what? Like, so yeah, that was dope to see that in there. And then the way it was in, it was dope,
I love that. I love that riddle because, like, I ask it to, like, on first dates, like, job interviews. It just gets people thinking, and you kind of get into their mindset. And a lot of people that come from different backgrounds always answer differently. So it's an unlocking riddle. You guys can steal it whenever you're on your first date or something.
I forgot, but I'm definitely going to use that now.
Yeah.
I forgot all about it, but yeah, I'm definitely going to use that now.
Maybe we'll reveal the answer at the end of the podcast. You'll have to keep listening in order.
And you might get it. I don't know. Because it took me a minute. Like, at first it's like, of course you're going to go with the obvious answer, but then, you know, you'll get it.
Yeah, we'll answer it later.
Yeah. But, and so, how long have you been here? You said you were from Nashville. How long have you been here in LA?
Yeah, so I went to school. I went to the University of San Diego.
Oh, cool.
So that kind of brought me out west to, to Southern California. And I was there for 4 years. And then, like, literally the day after I graduated, I moved up to LA.
Cool.
So that was about a year and a half ago. So, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I love LA. It's almost been 2 years now, actually. But I was always iffy on LA. Like, I didn't know.
Same.
I always wanted to live in New York.
Same.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's. I always tell people when they ask me, like, why'd you want to live in New York or anything? I'm like, well, you know, you can describe Chicago in a sentence. You can describe a city like maybe Nashville or Detroit, where you're from, in a paragraph. And you can describe LA on a piece of paper on one page. But you can never fully describe New York. No. It's ineffable.
It's just fucking amazing. Yeah. Like, the first time I visited, I fell in love.
Yeah.
I fell in love. It's just. I don't even know what it was. Like, when people ask me, like, why did you fall in love with it?
Yeah.
I can't explain it. It's a feeling. Like, I swear to God, it's just like New York is life. So, but yeah,
it is. And then there's that grind mentality in New York. That's why I was iffy on LA. Like, I didn't want to just be the guy that was just on the beach all the time.
Yeah.
And like, all of that
get
sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get comfortable. But then when I came to LA, I actually realized, like, this is a grind mentality town. Like, you know, you came out here. Everyone has come out here from different places for something.
Yeah.
And I read somewhere that, like, 1 in 6 people work in entertainment here, which I'm surprised it's not more. But
Yeah, me too. Yeah, because everybody that I've met so far, like, they work in entertainment in some kind of way.
Yeah.
Either acting or something behind the scenes or makeup, like, anything. Like, they're working in entertainment. So, yeah, I'm surprised it isn't more as well.
Yeah. But, you know, and like, what I really love about L.A., is the people that have made it out here, which is most people. Like, I've met very few people that are born and raised here. But what I love about it is that the people that come out here are ready to take risks. And I think that's really cool. They're not just content with where they are. Like, I grew up in middle America. Like, a lot of my friends, you know, or a lot of people that I went to high school with, like, they were just content with living there, and that's fine. They wanted to start a family early and all that. But the people that made it out here from Detroit, Nashville, Chicago, wherever, you know, even like Utah, they're ready to, like, come here, risk it all at work, and make what they want to make out of life.
Yes.
I think it's cool.
Yes, exactly. Like, and that's what's so dope. That's what made me feel a little at home here,
because
it's like everyone that I meet, Like you said, like, you rarely meet someone that's actually from here.
Yeah.
So it's like everyone that I meet, it's like, oh, where are you from? It'll be, you know, Iowa or, you know, somewhere else. And it's like, well, you know, why'd you come here? And it's like, shit, I had a dream and I'm following it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's, I'm not going to stop until I get that. And I just find that so dope, because no matter what it is, it's like the same for everyone. Like, you know what you wanted to do. And you're not going to stop until you make it. You know what I'm saying? And I just find that it's just so motivational. It's pushed me literally every day that I've been here. Because it's like, you know, you have those days where it's like, oh, fuck, what am I even doing here? Like, why did I, like, literally just drop every fucking thing and just, like, move here? But it's like, shit, just going outside and seeing people grinding and, you know what I'm saying? It's dope. And it is in, like, New York in a way.
Yeah.
Just more better weather.
Yeah. That's the
way
best
better
part.
Weather.
And it's so easy. Like, it's so easy not to do that. It's so easy to just stay where you are and be like, oh, I have a dream, but dreams are for, you know, while you sleep. It's not like what you want to do. It's so hard for people to say, fuck it. And, like, actually move out here.
Yeah.
And it brings about a lot of, like, I found that it brings about a lot of jealousy from people that you may have left back. You know, they're like just freezing and they're cold and they're like, oh, you know, you have to go deal with traffic and like big city mentality and all that stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, obviously. And they always say like higher rent and stuff. And obviously that's the price you pay.
It comes with it.
It comes with it. But, you know, and it's so easy to be jealous of that. But it is hard to move out here.
It is.
Various demographics and all that.
Yeah. So. I mean, especially coming from Detroit, it's not as high. I mean, it's getting there. Certain parts, it's getting there in price. But, you know, as far as, you know, the rent out here and just the cost of living, yeah, it's higher. But, sure. I mean, that's just, like, pushing me even more to, like, okay, I really have to get up and get it.
Yeah,
opposed to, like, you know, at home, like, I was, you know, comfortable. I was good.
Right.
But... yeah, so, but of course, it's going to be, you know, different as far as price-wise and cost of living. But, yeah, like I said, that just makes me grind even harder. You know what I'm saying? It makes me, like, get up, like, oh, no, you got this $1,000 rent that you have to pay. Uh-huh. You have to get the fuck up. Opposed to when I was back home, and I was, like, super comfortable. I had good job, salary, benefits, all that shit. And I was just, like, I'm comfortable. But I don't want to be, like, because this isn't what I want to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, and don't get me wrong, the job I had was cool, but it's not, it had nothing to do with what I want to do.
Right.
Like, at all. You know what I'm saying? So, it takes a lot for someone to be like, you know what? Man, fuck all this. Like, I'm about to go chase a dream. Like, even if you don't, you know, I know it takes time. And you may not see, like, results, like, super quick, but it's, like, every day you're progressing, you know what I'm saying? And it's, like, people like you and, like, other people that I meet that is, like, well, shit, I did it, and look at me. You know what I'm saying? I'm still doing it.
You're still
and
doing that, it, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's fucking motivation. So, I mean, I love it. Like, I love it. I mean, I still think about moving to New York because I'm, like, oh, man, as soon as it starts warming up there, oh, I want to go, but it's kind of the same for me.
Yeah,
it's kind of the same.
Well, in this day and age, it's like I said earlier that it's so hard to say fuck it and move out here.
Mm-hmm.
But like logistically, it does make it a lot easier that you can come out here, and if you have a car, you can like start driving for Uber, driving Postmates, and people who don't recognize that as a legitimate possibility.
Mm-hmm.
They're being lazy. Yeah. Like it, very frankly.
Yeah.
So you can come out here and do, if you want to come here, you can.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard mentality wise, but logistically you can make it happen. And
exactly.
The same thing with like New York. You can always up and go, but
yeah,
LA is a good part. I'm actually going to New York for 3 weeks to write the duo feature film. So I'm really excited about that.
Dope.
Yeah.
Dope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Within the next couple months or so?
I'm going to be going in about June or July after we're done with post-production.
Cool.
Yeah, before I came over here, you know, I was in the editing session over here in Hollywood. So after that's all done.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's still freaking freezing out there. It's still fucking cold. Like, it's just, it makes no sense. I want to go back and visit, but I'm like, yeah, I'm probably going to go like May, June, because... now I've gotten a little spoiled. I can't really deal with the cold and the snow. I don't even have a fucking coat out here. Like it's crazy. So, but yeah, I agree. Like anyone can really move if they want to. Mm-hmm. Like you said, like if you don't think it's possible, like if you're not ready to grind for that shit, because like, I mean, driving Lyft, driving Uber, or you know, any like DoorDash, it's so many ways to like make money.
Yeah.
It's just you have to get off your ass and just do it. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's a thing too, where people are just like, I'll go to my 9-to-5, pay my bills, and just be comfortable. Like I'm not gonna start over, because it's literally for some people, it's starting over.
Yeah,
you know what
I'm
saying? It's getting back out there and starting from zero and making everything happen for yourself. So. Yeah, but like you said, it's definitely possible. You just have to want it.
Yeah,
you just really
exactly.
Have to want it. Most people, they don't want it. They don't want it bad enough, but I do. So
I'm out here. I love it. Yeah.
So when we met, we were talking about, you brought up, the race conversation, and it's so crazy because I was just telling my sister like no one really has this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
With other races, you know what I'm saying? Like a bunch of black people, we can definitely talk about, you know, being black and, you know, what's that like? And, you know, but I feel like a black and a white person, we're not going to talk about the differences between being black and being white or the struggles that we go through and stuff like that, because it's like, I mean, to be honest, it's just an uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If
it's literally black and white. So
it's exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not really a conversation people like having.
Mm-hmm.
But when we met, it was just, I don't know, it just came up and it's like, that's a really good conversation to have. And so, I know, you know, you were talking about, you know, being Indian,
mm-hmm.
Having to choose, I guess like having to choose sides.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So could you like kind of get into that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was really interesting because, and it sounds like we just met and suddenly we were like, hey, you're black, like I'm black. Brown. No, it wasn't like that. It was a cool, right, healthy conversation, like you mentioned. But, you know, I grew up in like Clarksville, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. It was, it's a very, I would say it's like historically white Christian kind of area.
Oh, one of those.
Yeah, one of those. And, and well, especially like the parts that I grew up in, I guess. And,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I would have a lot of white, I had a lot of white friends and mm-hmm. I had black friends too. And then they would always not necessarily argue, but they would like try to converse and talk about the differences, but yeah. Neither side really got it.
Yeah.
And it became humorous at times. It was never like full out, you know, like Charlottesville punch each other or anything.
Yeah.
But I was always in the middle. Like I was literally, you know, if you look at my skin tone, it's like pretty much in between almost. And I was always like, I don't know what if I'm supposed to pick a side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which side I'm supposed to take. Like I'm a minority, but mm-hmm. I don't have to deal with historical persecution in the sense of you know, even that's carried into modern times of what's happening in the black community right now. And I want to recognize that, you know, mm-hmm. and I think it's important for me to like if I have to pick a side, hear both sides out. So that was a really interesting kind of thing for me to deal with growing up in like the South.
Yeah.
And then moving out here, you know, I'm still Indian like out here, but mm-hmm. there's a lot more culture out here and you know, learning from the Asian community, Hispanic community,
mm-hmm.
But even still focusing on, you know, talking to a bunch of my friends who are black and a bunch of people who I've worked with and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And also a bunch of people who are white and like out here, they kind of recognize that they're white and they can kind of have more of a healthier conversation and just mm-hmm. hearing everything out and leaning back and saying like, I still don't know where I'm supposed to stand. Not that you're supposed to pick a side.
Right. Yeah.
But if you had to, what's up? You know what I mean? I know that's a kind of mumbo jumbo way.
Because it's like, we don't think about that. And when I say we, I mean black people.
Sure.
We don't really think about, well, I guess I have never really even thought about that until you brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I have, you know, Indian friends, I have Asian friends, mm-hmm. I have like, you know, so I never really thought about like, damn, like they have to kind of choose, like, do they want to, you know, I guess embrace like white culture or like black culture, you know what I mean? Like, are you going to listen to this or like that? So it's just, I'd never really thought about it. And so like hearing you say that, it was like, damn, like, I don't think like, since I'm black, I have a side.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, I know what I am, who I am, who I, you know, what side I'm on. But I started thinking about like, damn, what about like, you know, people that are mixed, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? I see that a lot. Cause I have like a lot of mixed family members, you mm-hmm. know, and they're black and white. And some of them have gravitated more towards the white side, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? You see the difference. And then it's like, you know, the ones that gravitated more towards the black side, it's like they kind of get shunned from the black community. Like, oh, you're not black, you mixed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I kind of get where you're coming from with that. Cause it's like, if you were to say like, oh, you know, well, I like the black culture. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to gravitate more towards that culture. It's like, would you face any ridicule from that, from other people, from like the white people, or from like for Indians that
mm-hmm.
have like gravitated towards the white side? You know what I'm saying? Like that, it seems like risky in a way, because it's like, damn, what do I choose?
Absolutely. And so I think what it boils down to is code switching versus being fake.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give examples. So I think what it really boils down to is like code switching versus being fake. And I'll give mm-hmm. a couple examples. You know, there's
I heard that before, code switching.
Code switching. Yeah. And I think it's really important. And like when you talk about with mixed races and stuff mm-hmm. like that, if their mom is white and the dad's black,
mm-hmm.
like when you meet the mom side of the family, are you supposed to be more white?
Exactly.
And when you meet the dad, you know, the dad side of the family. And that's just an example. are you supposed to be more like culturally Black? Mm-hmm. And it's not really them being fake, you know, from what I've heard from experience.
Just turning it on, turning it off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so like in with the Indian culture, you see it a lot because on one side, like I mentioned this earlier, you feel like a minority. I mean, you mm-hmm. are a minority. Mm-hmm. Indians are, you know, and so you feel like you have to gravitate more towards other minorities.
Yeah.
And you know, especially growing up like in this day and age, I think it's really cool that like basically Black culture is culture now.
Yeah.
I think it's really awesome. Like you're wearing a God's Plan t-shirt and like, you know, like there's clothes are influenced by Black mm-hmm. culture, music, absolutely
everything.
Like, and that's really cool. So you tend to like recognize yourself being more and more into that culture.
Yeah.
But you know, and there brings about problems with that, which I'll bring up a little later. But on the other side, like if you ever go out and you're with your white friends, like the Chads of the world,
mm-hmm.
You know, like you tend to like dress more like in the polo, you know, Oxfords or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you just like recognize being more like that. Like Indian girls will either they'll rock like, you know, joggers and like a snapback.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they're with their white friends, they'll go full on like Becky sorority mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And that's just you subconsciously knowing that you're on, there's different sides of wherever you grow up.
Yeah.
The thing is like when, say if I'm rocking, like I bought like a pair of Air Jordans mm-hmm. a couple months ago. And my friend who's super cool, he's Black, super cool guy, but he's just like, oh man, you don't even hoop, like you're Indian. And I'm like, you know, I take that as a joke because it's funny.
Yeah.
And it's true, I don't hoop. I'm stunningly unathletic.
Yeah.
But then,
most people that wear Jordans don't even.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, but I'm just like, no, you know, I recognize that they're like cool shoes, probably the greatest shoes mm-hmm. ever made. It really interests me. Like, you know, I want to buy them.
Yeah.
And but there's always that comment and it's mm-hmm. never malicious or anything.
Yeah, yeah. It's just.
But yeah. And then on the white side, like if I'm wearing like a band T-shirt, that's like a Daft Punk T-shirt, mm-hmm. for example, which, you know, could be cool in certain sectors, but it's a mostly white thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my white friends would be like, oh, what do you know about Daft Punk? Like, they're Swedish. And I'm like, aren't you listening to Bollywood music? And I'm like, dude, yeah, I am listening to Bollywood music, but I also like Daft Punk. So mm-hmm. they're never, it's never malicious, but there's always comments like that where you just wonder, like, am I not supposed to play both sides? Or am I supposed to create a hybrid?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So that it's, and then, you know, because it's really code switching versus being fake, because you're never trying to be fake.
Mm-hmm.
You're just trying to, you know, be certain sides of who you actually are, be different, you know, different sides of the same coin.
Yeah. And even within the Black community, I feel like we kind of go through that too,
mm-hmm.
depending on, because like working in corporate America, you work in, you know, I used to work in a place where it was majority just white people. It was maybe, I want to say like 4 or 5 Black people.
Mm-hmm.
out of like 50, 60 people, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's, you find yourself trying not to be too Black, quote unquote,
Black.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so yeah, I see the code switching even in the workplace. I see that a lot in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I feel you on that. Cause it's like, you know, on one hand, it's like so I can be talking to my Black coworkers
mm-hmm.
and we'll be talking about, you know, whatever, I don't know, fucking TV show or something. Like, I don't even know a Black TV show. Oh my God. I mean, no, Martin. Okay. Let's say Martin. We were talking about Martin and shit like that. And we just, you know, chopping it up or whatever. And then when I'm talking to a white coworker, I can be talking about something else, something, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't even know, but something that I know that she would relate to.
Yeah.
And it's like, once again, like you said, that's not being fake. Cause like, I know about this. I'm not going to talk to you about some shit I don't know just to make conversation. Absolutely not. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it is like, you know, just code switching, you know what I'm saying? Or even the way I talk. Sometimes I can talk, like if I'm around my sisters and cousins and shit like that, then I'm talking a different type of way. You know what I'm saying? It's a little more lax. It's a little more hood or whatever.
Right, yeah.
But if I'm at a fucking interview or something, you know what I'm saying? Or if I'm like in, you know, a predominantly white setting, it's gonna sound different. My voice may sound a little different. I might get a little more, what do you call it, sophisticated, or you know, might pronounce my words a little better. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, so yeah, I see that a lot with us too. And it's like, I don't know, for the people, I always admire people that never switch up though. You know what I'm saying? Someone that can be Black, like, be their Black ass self all the time. Like, I love that shit. Like, I love it because it's like, I don't, and even with me, like, I don't, I find myself just being, like, talking the same and doing all that shit because I'm not in a corporate setting anymore. I don't have a reason to fake it anymore. You know what I'm saying? Code switch anymore because I don't have to. Like, I can just be myself. And if you like it, cool. If you don't, fuck you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
My money doesn't depend on that anymore, so I have no reason to do that. But I know some people, you know, it do. But like, for people that, you know, don't have to like switch it up and they can just be themselves all the fucking time, I love that. Like, I love it because it's like, damn, like, you're just being your Black ass self.
Right, right. And it takes, and then like, if anybody's listening to this and is like, I don't know, like, you know, I don't think code switching is, like, you're not supposed to do that, like, you're just being fake. Well, think about, like, the way you talk to your mom versus the way you talk to your friends. Even if it's not, you're not changing who you are. Like, you're just, you know, life is all about semiotic symbolism. You're you're applying symbols to words.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, like, to my mom, I'm not going to be like, oh, that fit is lit. Like, she's going to be like, what the fuck
what are
you
saying? What are you talking about?
Yeah. You know, so it's nothing. Yeah. And it's true. It's very, like, admirable, the people that can just be themselves all the time.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, and I'd love to talk to you about this, I think that shouldn't be an internal problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be like the ever-changing landscape of how we view like our work and like corporate America and stuff like that. Like, if you have to fit a mold, then maybe that workplace isn't a healthy environment as a whole. Yeah. And it's times are changing and everything like that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you shouldn't have to change who you are because the person that they're trying to hire is you.
Exactly.
So
And you just kind of, like, there's so many, like, memes and jokes and shit of how, like, you know, you before work, you're this way, and then after work, you're, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you kind of take off that mask or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, and I'm not just going to say just Black people, like, people, period. I feel like we kind of switch up, you know, depending on what it is. But I know, you know, from experience that, you know, you kind of have to, you don't have to, but I feel like we do it a lot. We kind of, you know, switch up just to fit in that corporate lifestyle of that corporate world, you know, and not be looked at as the ghetto Black girl.
Yeah, you know
what I'm saying? Especially when it's only a couple of you and you're just, you know, if I walk in and be in my normal, quote unquote, normal self, they're like, oh, okay, little ghetto ass girl. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I never wanted to be looked at like that.
Right.
So I'll tone it down a little bit. You
Even
know
if
what
you're
saying?
Qualified for the job.
Exactly. Like, I have all the credentials. I have experience. I know all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have to tone it down just to fit into this corporate box because I don't want to, you know, scare y'all or whatever the fuck. I don't even know how that makes people feel.
That's,
like,
yeah, it's terrible.
Why should it make you feel a way because I talk a certain way or I talk a certain way or I may wear my hair a certain way or you know what I'm saying? It's annoying, but like you said, I guess times are changing and like you said, Black culture is growing and it's starting to become the culture.
Yeah, Black culture is culture.
It is. It basically is. It is, because it's like you start to see, you know, other cultures doing what we do. And even the style of, like, clothes, everything, it's a remnant of Black culture. So, yeah, that's dope. I'm glad to see, like, shit changing like that, because it's like, bro, why do we keep having to change ourselves, like, just to fit in that fucking box? This shit it gets draining at a point. And that was another thing with me, like, with my old job, it was like, fuck, like, not only do I have to come here and do a job that I want to do, I'm coming here, like, faking every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, I don't want to do that. I kind of want to do, like, something else.
Right,
you know?
But
so,
still get whatever you're paying me to do.
Exactly, exactly, yeah. So
you're not paying me to dress a certain way or paying me to
talk
a certain way or order, whatever.
Yeah.
You're paying me for a job. I'll do that job.
I'm doing my job. I'm just going to do it and still
be yourself.
Be myself.
Right.
So, yeah, so yeah, that code switching is real. I don't think it's being fake. I think being fake, What would be an example of being fake though? Like,
it would, well, what I was going to get to, the malicious intent of things is like, as an Indian, when you gravitate towards more of like the Black culture, for example, I've seen countless friends do this. They feel that since they're minorities, they feel entitled to say the N-word. And that's, and that's something like, and it's not even just like within the, I don't think it's cool. Like, even if you're like just rapping lyrics and stuff, like, I don't know. I mean, we just don't have that ownership to make that decision. That was that's my thought on it.
Yeah.
As an Indian, but I hear it countless times, just like Indians calling other Indians that, or even I see it in the Hispanic community and the Asian community. Nobody should be. And obviously, what we talked about when we first met is like, white people know you shouldn't say it
at all.
Yeah, like at all, like, no matter what, because it's a very black white situation. Mm-hmm. But the people that are in the middle, they are like, they never really told not to.
Yeah.
And it should be like, hey, you know, we shouldn't have to sit you down and tell you that. You know, like, or not we, like, you know, we shouldn't, people shouldn't have to tell you that this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't obtain ownership of it, you shouldn't say it. You shouldn't use it in your vernacular, because it could be disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think being fake comes with malicious intent.
Yeah.
Code switching of me listening to like God's Plan by Drake or something like that, or like buying Air Jordans, that's code switching, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But me not recognizing who I am and trying to overtake another culture, that's, I think, being fake. That's my opinion. Yeah. What's your thoughts?
Well, when it comes to that mighty N-word, it's so crazy because for me, and this is only for me, I know people have their, you know, mixed feelings on it, but when it comes to minorities,
mm-hmm.
I don't really put too much stock into that word.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if a white person say it, like, that's a problem for me.
Yeah.
Like, don't fucking say it, period. Like, you don't have, like, you can't. Like, I didn't make the rules, okay? That you just can't. But when it comes to, you know, Indian, Latino, Asian, like, it's so tricky for me because, like you said, they're not told not to say it.
Yeah.
So I can't get mad when I see, you know, a bunch of teenage, you know, Indians rapping a song and saying it.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? I feel like the only time I have a problem with it when it is used maliciously.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? When you're saying it to degrade another person, then that's when it's like, hey, what the fuck? No. Like, no, you cannot do that. But when it's, you know, said in a song, or you just, you know, rapping it or whatever, and whatever, you know what I'm saying? It's in every fucking song. So of course you're going to say it, you know what I'm saying? I know white people say it. I've been to, oh my God, I went to Rolling Loud, that festival.
Oh man.
And when I say it, I heard it so much, and it's like, what am I going to do? Punch everybody? Like I can't. It's in a song. You know what I'm saying? Whatever. So in those situations, it's like, whatever.
Was Sheck West performing there? Because I swear, every time I hear the song Mo Bamba.
No, it was like, this was a couple years ago. So it was like Lil Wayne, Future, Migos. And you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's in every song.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear it, I don't feel a way about it when it comes from, you know, if you're just singing it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when, you know, other minorities, except for Black people, use it in like their everyday conversations, I don't know how to, it's very tricky because I don't know how to feel about it. You know what I'm saying? A part of me, I don't give a fuck. It's like I said, as long as you're not using it maliciously, I don't care. As long as you're not saying it to me, like, you can't come up to me. You, like, if you were to be like, hey, what up, my nigga? Like, I'd be like, wait, what?
Yeah, yeah. Pause.
What are you talking about? Like, hey, chill out, bro. Like, wilding right now. But if you were, like I said, if you were just singing a song or something, you said it, like, I wouldn't feel a way. You know what I'm saying? So it really depends on the person. Like, that's just me. I'm really chill. I'm really relaxed. It's like I said, as long as it's not being disrespectful, I don't really care. But I know that's always a thing. You know what I'm saying? I know, like, someone asked me that before. One of my Indian friends, like, asked me that before. And I was like, girl, I don't care. You know what I'm saying? Because I know you. I know you're a good person. I know you would never say that maliciously. Mm-hmm. And I know that as an Indian, as an Indian woman, you kind of, you share struggles that I share, you know what I'm saying? Like, and even worse, like, I remember when I was at the fucking airport, like, they literally, everybody's going through. It was Delta. They didn't even make us take off our shoes, nothing. We were literally just going through. And they stopped her, checked her bag and all that shit. And it's like, coincidence? Not really.
I always have to shave before I go to the airport.
You know what I'm saying? You know? Like, so that's bullshit. So it's like, I get it, you know? Mm-hmm. So with that, I'm just like, I'm really lax with it. You know what I'm saying? White people, no, absolutely fucking not. But everybody else, cool. Like, no. So, but I know, you know, if you ask another Black person, they're going to give you a different answer.
Right. And that's where, like, I mean, we keep saying the word tricky, but like, and it is, I'm not the one to say what's right or what's wrong.
Right.
And in a way, like, maybe you're not the only person to say what's right and what's wrong. Right. Cause like, it's a whole community. And
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
And that's like kind of the tricky thing is,
yeah, and it's like, it's really to each their own. Like I said, I'm more chill about it. You know what I'm saying? Because first of all, I'm grown. Second of all, I understand. I can't really stop people from saying it because we say it so much. Like, Black people, I know me myself, like, I say it a lot. Like, I say it a, like, maybe too much or whatever. And it's like, I can't really tell someone else, like, hey, I can say it, but you can't say it because, like, no. Like, yeah, no. Yeah, yeah. It's become something that it's like, yeah, it was a malicious term, and yeah, it can still be used as a very derogatory term, but for the most part in today's culture, like you said, Black culture is taking over. So with Black culture, it comes that, you know what I'm saying? You're going to hear that or whatever. And, you know, I can't really get mad when another person feels like they can say it because they are not white. I don't know. It's, like, it's tricky, man. It's
we're going to really keep tricky. Coming back to that.
Part. I know, yeah. Like, because it's so tricky. Like, even when we first talked about it, I'm like, damn, like, I know me. I don't give a fuck, you know, when it comes up. But I know a lot of people that are like, absolutely not. No one should say that fucking word except for Black people. And it's like, all right. And that's not wrong. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's not wrong. I can't say that. You know, I just don't care.
Right. Well, and I think someone made a really good point. I won't say who that person is, but we were having this conversation, and it was a friend of mine who's Black, and I wasn't taking. I think we were in agreement. We were just, you know, we were just talking about it, and it was snowballing in a really cool way. And he said, you know, listen, if I own a car, okay, and you borrow the car and get into an accident in that car, I still, the registration is still under my name. Mm-hmm. Okay. But if I lease you that car and we go through the paperwork and we change hands, I give you my pink slips or whatever. And you're making the payments. Then when you get into an accident, it's still your name on that.
Yeah.
When you get into an accident. But if I'm just letting you borrow it for a day to help you move, like, say, I have a truck and you get into a fender bender, you know, it's still my problem at the end of the day. It's my insurance.
Yeah.
So I thought that was like a really interesting metaphor because for some people they would consider borrowing your car versus leasing your car. And you know, I think people can figure out what we're trying to say, but there's just differentiating opinions on it.
See, even with that though, like, I feel like the, when you say like we own that term, do we? Cause it's like, it didn't come from us. Like, we didn't make that term. You know what I'm saying? Like, white people made that term to describe us in a derogatory way.
Yeah.
We kind of took it, flipped it a little bit, you know, added a to it, and now it's cool. So, we don't even own it. So, the fact that it's like, that's where it gets kind of tricky for me. Because it's like, we don't even own that word. But if anybody say it, I get it. If white people say it, cool, it's go off. You know what I'm saying? Go off. Because if they're saying it in a way that is, I'm like getting over a cold, so I'm like stuffy. No. But if they're saying it in a way that's like, you know, demeaning, then go off. Like, definitely, you know, that's wrong. But for other people, if they say it, how can we say we, I just don't, that ownership shit, that's what's really fucking with me. Like, we don't really own that word. We didn't make that word up for us. That word was made for us to demean us. Mm-hmm. We made it cool. And what the fuck, like, I don't know. So that's why I can't even really get too mad about it when people say it, because it's like, it wasn't ours to begin with. You know what I'm saying? Like, we said nigga, and that makes it cool. Or whatever, we said in songs, what up my nigga, all this, or whatever. But at the same time, if somebody called you a nigger, or if somebody, if not even a white person, if a black person calls another black person a nigger, then it's still the same effect if somebody else called you that. So, it's just don't say it in a mean way, man. I don't know, like, fuck it. I can't. This is like, I don't feel like I've never felt like, oh, that is ours. Like, it's not.
From my perspective, it's really cool to just like hear this out.
Yeah.
And not tell you, or not even like bring in any more input, because it's not, I just like to, I think it's really important. And the basis of our conversation was, I think it's really important for different races to like hear each other out, see what their points of view are. And that's it. Just reflect.
Yeah.
So I think it's really cool that we had this conversation.
Yeah. Because it needs to be had, and other people need to hear it too, because it's like, someone may be thinking like, oh, I'm wrong for saying it, or a black person might be like, oh, is it bad that I don't care? No, it's not bad that you don't care.
No. Yeah.
It's not, because it's not ours. Like, whatever.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, when you brought that up, when you, you know, said that we should have that conversation, I definitely was, like, all in, because I'm like,
And again, listeners, I didn't just meet her and I was like, hey, we should talk about the N-word. It wasn't like that. It was a very cool, healthy conversation.
No, it led up to it.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, is it hard, as far as, like, dating? Are you dating, relationship? What's going on with that?
I am single.
I'm nosy, so no. Whatever.
No, I love it. I was hoping we'd get into this. I am single. I'm dating around.
Okay. Okay.
I'm living the LA dating app lifestyle, I would say.
So I can find you on Tinder, huh?
Maybe not Tinder.
Okay.
Maybe Bumble or Hinge.
See, I don't know what any of those are.
Yeah. Oh, really?
No,
oh, so you're new to all that.
Yeah, like, Tinder was, like, I just, like, got back on Tinder or whatever, because I was, like, I'm bored, and I need a quick way to meet people or whatever, but Tinder is nasty.
That's what I was going to say, is, like, I was like, nasty. Dude, Tinder is a cesspool right now.
It is like, hey, we match, motherfucker. Like, wait, sir, can I get some coffee? Like,
yeah, right?
What's up?
Not even a vodka soda? Or...
Look, they don't even, that's just way too straight to the point for me. So I don't know about Tinder.
So Bumble is like, it's the same concept. You're swiping, but the girl has to send the first message. So it eliminates like 80, 70, 90% of like the disgusting guys out there, because dudes are the worst. And then Hinge is like, you have to like a specific thing about someone.
Okay.
So they'll say, like, they'll give answers to questions and they'll give multiple photos. You have to like them, like a certain concept of them. It's helping. We're trying to filter out the nastiness.
Yeah. And I'm hoping like we're getting there. That sounds cool.
Interesting is, you said that sounds like work.
It does.
And a lot of guys are like, I don't want to like this. I'm like, you want to date someone, but you don't want to like a specific thing about them? That's horrible.
I mean, it sounds like, I don't know. I'm going to try it out. I'm going to jump on.
Yeah, you should.
Research purposes only.
Yeah, and what's, exactly, for this podcast.
Right?
Well, what's interesting is I read somewhere that Asian men and black women have the hardest time on dating apps.
Yep.
So, like, we're probably not even getting the full experience, or like...
Oh, absolutely not.
And even on Tinder, people are probably just, like, looking at us and, like, thinking multiple...
I mean, I do get a few hits, but, you know, that part. Yeah, so with that, it's so funny because, I mean, I do get, you know, hits or whatever on Tinder, matches or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
But Issa from Insecure, she actually said that in her book that, you know, they should just, you know, black women and Asian men, we should just, you know, get together.
Yeah.
And the thing is, no, I don't.
That's not the answer.
That's not the answer to that. But it's like, I mean, it's, if you think about it, shit, why not? You know what I'm saying? Because it's tough.
Yeah, it's and it's tough. It's an interesting chain that I've been trying to observe, and I could be way off on this, mm-hmm. but like, and I'll just use my perspective because it's the only one I know. Indian dudes are trained to like other brown girls,
mm-hmm.
but then they rebel because they live in the U.S. And they like they want to be secretive from their parents, so they actually end up liking white girls a lot.
Mm.
So that's like it's revenge for the East India Trading Company. I don't fucking know. Right. And then, but white girls are also trained to like white guys, mm-hmm. especially where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you have like racist dads that are like, you can't bring home
some black guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So then they rebel, or they say they rebel, and then like go like black guys.
Mm-hmm.
Black dude, you get the chain, dudes do the same thing, and then they go with absolutely. White girls, and that's I'm sure that's something that's recognized.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that on multiple ends of the spectrum, yeah, there's Asian men and black women,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of get left out in the whole circle.
Yeah, because it's like, you do get that. You get the black guys that wants the white girl or the foreign chicks, you know what I'm saying? And then it's like, damn, what about the regular black girls? Hey, mm-hmm, and it's like, I mean, it's starting to get, I guess, popular again to date the natural black girl and all that, but it's tough, especially here. I've seen a lot of interracial dating in L.A., but I get it because, I mean, it's so diverse here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, even with me, like, I love black guys. I've only dated black guys. But shit, here, it's like, I've been on a date with a Mexican guy and, like, like a white guy. It's like, because it's all out here. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I do see black guys, but not as often.
Sure.
Like, since I've been in Hollywood, like, in NoHo, it wasn't any black guys. Like, I didn't see, like, maybe like five. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like in Hollywood, I've seen a lot more, but it's still like you see more Latinos and Asian guys, white guys. So I see how that happens. But yeah, black girls, we get left out a lot.
Yeah.
We get left out of that, you know, unless, you know, we do get left out a lot. But
and what I said earlier, like when I said like, when you said the Issa Rae thing, where Asian men and black, when I said that's not the answer, it's just because like why should we have to conform? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
We should be able to have our pick of whoever we fall
whoever we want. Exactly.
Yeah, we don't have to just figure out a solution because we're like the ones left out.
Yeah.
That was my clarification on that.
Yeah. So, with dating in LA, do you find it hard or what is your preference? Like,
In terms of like, what's my type?
Yeah. what's my type?
Yeah. Well, it goes back to like, you know, I think it's really, you're like, again, you're trained as an Indian person, you're trained to like, go find that beautiful brown skin woman that like will become your house cooking wife. It's like, it's pretty shitty.
Yeah.
But then you like, and then you're like, you're trained that whole way and you watch like Indian movies. And like, I used to work in Bollywood.
I never would have thought that, by the way, either.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I never would have thought that.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's just like, you're like trained and trained, but then like, you just see a beautiful like Hispanic woman or you see a beautiful white woman, black woman, whatever. And then you want to get to know them. But then you're like, as an Indian dude, and I've talked to other Indian guys about this, you're just like, what do you talk to them about? Like, what do you talk to a black woman about? What do you talk to a Hispanic person? And then I'm like, why don't you just go on a date, grab a drink, grab a coffee, whatever it is, and then like figure it out.
Yeah.
Why does there have to be an agenda? Why does
that
have to be?
I'm guilty of that because that was always my way of thinking. Like when it came to like dating black guys, I'm like, I'm gonna date a black guy because we get each other. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But not all the time. You know what I'm saying? I can meet a black guy that you get my jokes because we've seen the same movies. We listen to the same music. We have the same background. So we understand certain things about each other. But then I can meet a black guy that, for some reason, haven't seen fucking the movies that I've seen or listen to the music that I listen to or whatever. And they just don't get it either.
Right.
So, but, you know, that was my way of thinking until, I guess, like, even moving out here, I was, like, so against, like, no, I'm just on a date with black guys or whatever. But then I went on a date with a white guy, and it was actually pretty cool. Like, he got it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, because my thing is, I don't want to have to explain my story to someone. So that can be hard. Yeah, that can be pretty tough.
Yeah. And going back to your, like, original question, like, the experiences out here. LA dating, you have to see through the bullshit.
Yes.
And now we're not even talking about race or anything. Any person just you go through, everyone is going to tell you that they're an actor, they're a model, Instagram model. They're going to tell you whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You, My advice to anybody listening out there is just be genuine, no matter what city you're in.
Yeah.
And if they like you, they'll like you for you.
So. Yeah, LA, you gotta cut through the bullshit.
You have to cut through the bullshit. And I'm not even one to talk from experience. I'm not like married and happy. I'm single and sad.
No, I'm not single and sad. We're single and dating out here. That's We're just living this LA life, man.
It's just like, I want to start a spreadsheet for the amount of like coffees and dinners and drinks I've bought that have not come to any fruition.
Oh, you have to.
I'd be like, maybe I'm like $10,000 in debt at this point.
Small investments that went nowhere.
If you're out there and you like cute brown women, I'm here.
Look, he is single, available, and pretty handsome. So, hey. Well, thank you so much for coming to talk with me. This has been great. If you want to go ahead, shout out your Instagram.
Yeah, sure. It's I Just Go By K. It's at I Just Go By K. If you're like scrolling through there and you see like half naked women, I used to do modeling photography by profession. And now that I don't, people don't like my shit anymore. So go in there and like it.
Gotta throw in a naked girl every once in a while.
Right? The thirst trap or whatever.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming. And that is it. Peace.
Have a good one.